Question number 14977, Ernest Harvey, Reel 9.
E. Harvey, Reel 9. After Brussels, where did you go, Mr. Harvey?
Well, our next objective was a place called Gale, which was over the Albert Canal. Well, what happened there was A Company of our battalion made the bridgehead. They went over the canal, made the bridgehead. Then B Company went through them, and then C Company, we went through the river, through A Company, through B Company, and a bit further on. And I think D Company went through us. So we weren't too far from Gale. We didn't have much fighting at the time. We thought it was going to be fairly decent. So anyway, unfortunately, I don't know what happened, but I was dug in on my own that time. And I'd got nicely dug in, and I think everybody was about 5 yards apart. And stayed there all night. I think that's the worst night I've ever spent in my life, because Jerry started tossing a few mortars over and what have you. And anyway, come morning,
being away from your comrades, although just a short distance, did you feel cut off?
Oh yes, I felt something awful. In fact, that night I said my prayers, because after what I'd been through, and I'd come that far, I thought, no. And I was on my own. Oh, I felt, it's hard to describe, but I felt really alone, you know. And I was actually pleased when morning came.
Was it usual to dig in on your own in this situation?
Well, no, there's generally two of you. But I think what was happening was you were getting that short of men. I think that's what was happening. You on your own, and that was sort of, I think that was it, could have been the answer.
But it was important.
But that's the only night I can remember being dug in on my own, and oh, I hated it, you know.
It was important to you and others, of course, to feel close, human contact
yes,
with someone else.
You always like to, I think that was very important. I mean, even when you're putting the tuck in, you wanted to be close to someone. They used to tell you, keep your distance, keep wide apart. But if you notice anybody who goes into attack, they keep together, they like to be together. I think it must be nature to stick together, because you want company. And I think that was it. But that particular night, it was one of the worst nights I've ever spent. And come morning, well, I was pleased when morning came. And when morning came, we got orders to advance into Gale itself. Now, when I got out of the trench, I could see these two Jerrys about 150 yards away, and they start firing these mortars at us. And that, of course, I start firing back at them, and eventually they retreated and they were going back into the town. So we advanced, and I was crossing this road to go into town, and this young girl came towards me, and I was amazed because she was British. And in her hand she had a large jar of peaches, and she gave us a peach, and she started talking me in English. I couldn't believe it, and that peach was marvellous. And she said, oh, we've been waiting for you coming. And she says, my father's a doctor in the town. And I says, oh, but she must have only been about 13 or 14 years of age. And anyway, I had to leave her, but she told me, in fact, she may have saved our lives, a few of us anyway, because she told us where Jerry was. He says, he's so-and-so in such a place. And anyway, we made our way into the town, and I gets into this hotel in like a cellar in the corner of the town, and sets, what happened, I just had a rifle at the time, and we set up there. And we were watching this road, and You'd no sooner go down into this cellar when you know the type of cell where the doors lift up, the bee cell and the bee goes in. Well, that's where we were. We were like down in there, and we had like bags or something. We made ourselves a pretty good position, and then all hell let loose. He started tossing mortars, everything at the buildings. He came up with these like tanks, and he started firing point blank at the building. And anyway, there was a few casualties. Then this artillery officer, he came up and he had his brain, and he said, "Can you use this brain?" I says, "Oh yes." And I set this brain up pointing to this road. There was a road leading into the town, and I'd got it set up nicely and got the magazine on. And then there's a whole company of Jerry start marching up the road to come into the town. From my marching, I couldn't believe it. And anyway, I opened fire, and the Jerry's was flying always. So then, as I said before, he was starting, more shells came flying at us, and Jerry was coming towards us, and we were firing back, but it was getting that nasty, because he was coming with these very heavy guns, and he was blasting, well, more like tanks with the, what can I say, but he was blasting the buildings. He was knocking the buildings down left, right and centre. So this chap says, "We better leave here, otherwise we've had it." So really, we went further back into the cellar, and we waited until everything died down. We came back out again, and there were still a few Jerrys about, and we started firing again. And he started mortaring us. But
were you hitting any of the Germans?
Well, I suppose there's quite a few would get hit, but I only got one mag off, because really he had too much firepower. I mean, you can just imagine, you know, when a tank or something similar comes up and he's starting blasting the beetle above you, and then the shelling, you know, he's mortaring you, and it's no fit place to stay. The only answer is you've got to move.
And the noise must have been tremendous.
The noise was terrible, because more or less you were inside the building, and
how did you make yourself heard?
Well, you just used to shout and just signal to each other. You know, it's funny how you could tic-tac to each other through the noise. But I mean, you were diving here and diving there. I mean, when he's shelling and he's mortaring and spandos, it's hard to tell what wasn't flying about there. But we suffered terrible casualties there. And I said it was a cornfield all over again. And I remember the tanks we lost there was nobody's business. In fact, I think that must have been the biggest scrapyard in Belgium for tanks. I've never known as many British tanks knocked out. Oh, Jerry had a field day. It was pitiful. And where the men disappeared, though, I don't know. But I think there was only about four or five of us in this hotel at the finish, and there was quite a few of us at the beginning, but there was, you know, they seemed to keep moving about, shifting about. But we had a heck of a lot of casualties there at Giel.
How did you get out of it?
Well, eventually, I think it was another battalion what came up, and I'm not sure it was one of the COs of another battalion came up and like relieved us and got us back out altogether. And after it was all over, someone went round and he counted the number of men what was left in our company, and there was only 17 of us, if my memory serves right. So I just thought to myself, my good life, 17 of us. But I think a lot must have been taken prisoner. In fact, I know one or two who were like.
What effect on your nerves has incessant shellfire at such close range?
Well, I think the thing is, every time you heave a gun, anything go off, you're diving on the bottom, which comes automatic. You know, even years after, if something, you know, a gunfire, anything goes off, a noise, you're diving at the bottom, like, well, I think everybody was bomb happy. You know, I mean, there was quite a lot sent back there, bomb happy.
You said there were 17 men left. Had you lost your company commander?
Well, it's funny, at Gale, well, I can't remember what happened to our company commander, but I always remember Major Atkinson, who I told you, we all thought he was mad. On our way there, I think he'd been like managing, we were that short of officers, I think he was doing A company and our company, which was C company, and he got these two or three horses, and his batman was looking after the horses, and he went into the attack in Gale on a horse. This is no kidding or joke, and we couldn't believe it. And I heard he'd been shot through the chest at Gale, and somebody said it was an anti-tank rifle. And of course, I always remember years after Major Kirby asked me what happened to Major Atkinson, and I told him, well, I says, I think he was trying to get the VC, and Major Kirby just laughed. And I thought, to go into an attack on a horse, I mean, against Spandos and artillery was just, I don't know what he was trying to do, whether he was trying to get himself killed or what. But I mean, it took a brave man to do that, like, but as I said, we all said he was mad, you know? And he was always in the thick of the fighting, was Major Atkinson. And they tell me, like, he was the same at Primisoli Bridge, that's in Sicily. When he was out there, he was the same. He must have been a very brave man to do what he did.
Close friends again, did you lose any at Gale?
Unfortunately, no. I still came out, me and my friend, Lance Corporal Pastoril, came out of that. And other than that, me and Charlie is the only two I can ever remember, you know.
You'd fought now right across from Normandy, right up almost into Holland.
Mm-hmm.
What effect of constant fighting was having on you? Did you feel more nervous, more careful?
Well,
more wary?
No, now I think we'd got to such a state now, we just accepted death. At least I did then, you know. I mean, no doubt I said my prayers at Gale, which I'm not afraid to tell anybody. But I think then, I mean, you got to such a pitch, I think you just accepted it, and you just went into the attack, and you just said, well, if that's got to be, that's got to be. You've accepted it, you know, because you saw death every day. It was there. What could you do about it? You just said, well, we've got to, it's military, it's your job, more or less, and that's it. You accepted it, and I think that's the way we got that used to it. We just took it as it came.
Your health wasn't being affected by this?
Well, eventually it did do. But this was after Gale. We went to Nijmegen. But before that, I always remember, after Gale, Major Montgomery, the company, the battalion again, was made up again with reinforcements. And we were all in this massive field. And who should come but General Montgomery. And the company commander had this big blackboard up, and on the blackboard it told us this big Operation Market Garden, whatever, was coming off, like, what was going to happen. The parachute was going to drop there, so many at Nijmegen, so many at Arnhem. And but we were just going to follow up. Oh, lovely. And our job, we were going to do garrison duties. So I always remember this, garrison duties in Munster. That's what the 50 Day was going to do. That was what he told us. And we just took that, like, with a pinch of salt, you know. And anyway, after that, we moved up to, when it come to that particular Sunday, we would start to move up, and we saw all the paratroops dropped, and it was a fantastic sight. At the same, that was a terrible sight, because you could see the RAF coming over, and as a plane was, you could see a plane get shot down, and as it was getting shot down, another one would take its place in formation. They would drop the load, and they were getting shot down left, right, and centre. Another one, Well, it was unbelievable. But the RAF, they were fantastic. It was unbelievable to watch it. It was just like going to the pictures, just to think, you know, to do what they did. And then, of course, all the paratroopers landed, were dropping. Well, there was hundreds of thousands of them. And we all jumped up out of the trenches and were cheering. And, of course, we didn't cheer long because Jerry started shelling us, and then we were back to where we started again. And then eventually we started moving up towards Nijmegen. But of course, there was still a lot of fighting going off. You know, Jerry was still in different places.
Did you get involved in this?
Yes, we were sort of like mopping up here and there. And there was still a lot of Jerry's about. And then eventually we got into Nijmegen.
Did it take you any length of time to get there?
No, of course, we were just the follow-up ones. You know, we were following up into Nijmegen. I think it was the Guards Armoured what was in front. And when we got into Nijmegen, we got, I think it was about 7 days LOB in Nijmegen. And the sergeant says, well, you keep there, and you start organising the men for the garages in different places. And I was going to sleep in this garage. And it was right opposite the park, in Nijmegen itself, opposite this park. And they called this old couple Reinen, Gustav Reinen. I still remember a name and a father, and the two of them. And they said, you no sleep here. They couldn't speak English like, and took me in, you sleep here, the lovely double bed. Well, I couldn't believe it. And anyway, that night, as I say, I'd never slept in the bed for the few months. I had to get all my clothes off, where you can just imagine, you know, we've been in trenches and the state we were in. And I had a wash, and I went to bed. The old chap gave us a pair of pyjamas to put on. Well, it was heaven. Well, when I woke up in the morning, I got the biggest shock of my life. My clothes had all been cleaned, my trousers was pressed, my boots was polished, my gaiters was even cleaned. I couldn't believe it. She must have sat up all night. So I thought, why? My, what'll them say when I go out on parade, you know, because we had to parade at 8 o'clock outside the front on the morning. I thought, what'll they say? Will they see me? What'll they think? When I went out there, I was smart, all dressed. Aye, but they were nearly all the same. It's unbelievable. I said, my good life. Even the sergeant, he was, so they all must have thought the same, like, but, and the poor souls, well, they were living on nothing. They had very little food, anything. Well, I mean, I saw the cook. We had bags of gold because, I mean, you imagine when the cater for the battalion, well, with that many casualties, there's bags of food. So I got some butter and some jam and some soap, and whoa, they were delighted, and they didn't know what to do for you. But they were fantastic. But after about 5 days, we had to go over the Nijmegen Bridge. You know, we were finished. That was our rest. And going over there, the Guards Armoured had been in this wood on the left-hand side over the bridge. We got over the bridge all right, and we went through this wood, and the Guards Armoured, the casualties were still there, but they were nearly all killed who was there. And I always remember this chap, he was still standing up getting a shave. He'd been shot through the head. I says, snipers again. So we went further on, and we were dug in this orchard. There was a house and an orchard. It was me and Charlie together, and there was only about a dozen of us spread out in this orchard. And Charlie started picking these pears, and then he peeled them, and he put them in his mess tin, and he heated them up, and then we'll have some pears. So we used to stand two on a night time. I mean, we got quite a bit... mortar bombs, but we were used with those. And that particular, after a few days there, when I woke up this morning, My stomach was right out, was swollen, and Charlie says, you better see the sergeant, you'll have to go sick. And the sergeant saw me. He sent me down to the MO. Oh, the MO says, it looks as though you'll have to go to hospital. Anyway, he says, I'll have to see the CO first. I don't know who the CO was, but he sent for me. Had a few words. He said he was sorry to see us go. I was only one left of a few since D-Day.
What were the conditions like that you are now fighting under?
Well, the conditions in Holland was really bad because it was a very wet area, and of course it was at this time when after the Arnhem Doo there was quite a lot of chaps trying to get back over this river, but at the time I think we'd just done a couple of patrols, but really where we weren't too bad.
It's coming into winter, late in the year.
Well, this would be what, September, it would be October.
1944.
Yeah, October 44, yes. Yes.
So the weather must have changed.
The weather was changed, it was getting colder and damper, yes.
How were you finding it from the point of view of keeping warm and keeping your health?
Well, then they'd sent us up our overcoats. We had our overcoats then, you know, with the big packs. We'd managed to get those up, and blankets and what have you. We were managing okay at the time.
Because at this time it was pretty static.
It was static at the time, yes.
So what were the Germans doing?
Well, they were just the yard shells coming over, you know. Because this is when the Arnhem Doo was going off, like, you know, and we were finding it was very quiet.
Mail, of course, is still be coming through.
Yes, I just got the odd letters then, you know.
You'd lost a lot of men now. What were the replacements like that you were getting?
Well, the replacements, there were a lot of young chaps, all very young, 18, 19. Well, saying that, I mean, I was only 21 at the time myself, like.
You'd be quite a veteran now.
I wasn't, yes, quite a veteran.
Where were they coming from?
Well, they were coming from all different parts. It didn't say because it was Durham Light Infantry, that they all came from County Durham. Because, I mean, even my old platoon sergeant was a Cockney, and Lance Corporal Passfield, he was a Cockney. No, they were all different nationalities now what was coming into Durham's.
And the regiments, of course, they were
coming
from.
Well, sometimes all different regiments, Dorsets, East Yorks, anywhere where they get them.
Was it in any way weakening the morale of the battalion to have so many outsiders coming so quickly?
Well, I don't think we took that much notice. It didn't bother us at all, really. No, I don't think so.
You can't recall any particular events at this point?
Not there, no.
So you'd had this illness and you'd been taken back to hospital. What was wrong with you?
Well, when I saw the MO, he said, oh, he says, I think you've got a hernia. So they gave us all these documents, and I had to go to Eindhoven and make my own way to Eindhoven. Well, there was plenty of transport, and I had all the documents, and they put me on a light aircraft, and I landed at Brussels Airport. I had a landing strip in the hospital grounds, and I landed there. And I went in there, and I got as far as the passage, and of course it was absolutely chock-a-block with wounded and what have you, and well, it was full. It was really terrible. And then eventually this doctor came round, and he used to examine you, what's your trouble, and examined you, hernia, puts a ticket on me, blighty. Well, I couldn't believe it. I thought, well, isn't that lovely? And I spent the night there, another one of the worst nights I've spent in my life. Because they were, you know, you can just imagine the place like that. They were coming in there, they were dying and shouting for the mothers, the usual caper. But the following day, I came out, and there was a Dakota waiting, and I went on the Dakota, and I was flown to in the aerodrome at Farnborough Aerodrome, and I was right next to a Canadian hospital at Farnborough, and I was went into the hospital in Farnborough there. I was examined there, and I was asked where was the nearest hospital I would like to go to up north, and I said Bensham at Gateshead, and I was put on the train to Newcastle, and when we got into Newcastle station, all the women was waiting for us, cigarettes, cups of tea, and what have you, and then I went into Bensham Hospital. So I thought, well, the best thing to do, if I can, use the phone instead of them sending a telegram. So I phoned up me works, where I worked, at the Co-op, and told them that I was in hospital, but I was all right, and not to worry. And they informed the family. And of course, the same day, my father and my brother came through to the hospital, and they were pleased when they saw I was okay.
Did you have an operation?
No, just tablets and treatment. But was more or less like a recurrence hernia, but they could treat it. It was with all the digging in, they said, you know, all the work, digging in, what have you, and that was the start of it.
What was it like in the hospital? What was the regime like?
Well, it was quite good. We were all in the hospital blues there, and the food was quite good. Oh, no, it was quite good.
What date did you arrive there?
I think it'd be late October. I wouldn't like to say what date exactly. Late October 1944.
And your feelings being back home?
Oh, it was great. Great to be back home, smashing. And the people of Gateshead was really fantastic. You know, they couldn't do enough for you. You know, you washed out every night and the everything was free. If you got on the buses, they didn't charge you anything, and you went to the cinemas, everything was free, you didn't pay anything, you know, wherever you went.
Did you realise at that time that your war was over?
Well, I didn't at the time, you know, but I knew the war was still going on in Burma as well, but I didn't realise that it would still be going on as long as it was in Germany.
When did you hear that the division had been broken up and the battalion were coming back home?
Well, I heard later on when... where was I? Oh, I think I learned when I was at Sabourne Barracks, I heard then that they'd all been broken up at Nijmegen. The battalion, that would be in late October as well. So they must have broken up maybe 2 or 3 weeks after I'd left them.
How long were you in hospital?
Oh, I was in hospital quite a while. I mean, the thing was there, when you were in hospital, you didn't want to leave. And the doctor there, it was really laughable. He only came round, I think, maybe once a fortnight. You know, who said you could go out to join a battalion or join something. And it was a funny thing, but when they knew the doctor was coming, everybody used to disappear. And when he used to come, there was no patients there. But eventually, I was there about maybe a couple of months, and eventually he caught everybody on the hop. You know, they locked all the doors and got everybody in, and nearly all got chased out of the hospitals.
Of course, where were you sent?
I was sent to Scarborough. I think it was Scarborough Convalescent Home. Scarborough Convalescent Home. It was a convalescent depot, and I think I was there about 3 or 4 weeks. And then from there, I went to... Darlington, isn't it? Where the Hunger Monkey?
Hartlepool.
Hartlepool Town Hall. That's where I went from there. That was a holding battalion, and I was there a short while, and then they transferred me and put me on a what we call it for Burma, and unfortunately I got taken off, like when they found I'd a hernia and I'd been regraded, and they took me off it.